fighting Obamacare, how Susan Brooks is using taxpayer money to spread her message. Dan Coats and Joe Donnelly offer perspective on the Senate floor, and Greg Zeller backs off a plan to drug test pregnant women. That plus a new poll on the marriage amendment, Paul George, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 27,
2013. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, Indiana Congresswoman Susan Brooks is fighting Obamacare in an official mailing sent to constituents. The mailing spells out a voting record in opposition to the president's health care plan and says Brooks is committed to repealing it. It began arriving in the homes of voters late last week. The freshman Republican is using franked mail when most of her colleagues are using Facebook and email. It looks like you're trying to get people to come around to your point of view.
Well, it's not my point of view. It's the majority of the people who have been talking to me, whether it's coming to events or calling in.
Is the Susan Brooks strategy a good one? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, that mailer is approved by a bipartisan committee, so there's no question about whether or not it's appropriate. Is it a good idea?
Well, you know, Obamacare starts October 1st, and people are enrolling. You would think that as the representative of that district, for all the uninsured people she has in that district, and she probably has tens of thousands of them, that she would be giving them information about how to sign up and what it means and all of that. Instead, she's using the franking privilege to make sure that there's nobody that goes around her on the right in the Tea Party, so she won't be, as they say, primaried. Because all she's doing there is saying
you
what her voting record.
You think this is about 2014?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Don't you?
Well, Luke Messer is doing similar things, but on email, at no expense to the taxpayers.
Look, the franking privilege is approved, as you said, by a bipartisan commission, and she ought to be communicating with the people in her district about how she feels about the major issues of the day, and there's nothing that's being more discussed now than Obamacare, and she has received overwhelming negative feelings about this particular piece of legislation in public meetings, phone calls, communications to her offices, and she is mailing back to them how she's dealing with this issue, and I think it's totally legitimate that she's doing it the way she's doing it. It's an important issue and one that a vast majority of the people in her district disagree with as far as the law that might go into effect coming up in October.
Yeah.
But it looks like a campaign mail piece, and the cover says fighting Obamacare.
It does look like a campaign flyer. I would agree with you. But again, the appropriateness of it is not a subject of debate here for the reason you point out, that the franking panel that reviews these said okay. Now, so we can't really address that with any wisdom or specificity. I think the bigger question has been suggested here is, you know, why? And I think it is a desire to make sure that she stays in the political spectrum in an area that would bode well for her in the coming election cycle. And that district, keep in mind, is probably it's not as if she's having to do a lot of arm twisting to convince her constituents.
It's a strongly Republican district. It's also pretty conservative. What does this get her? Will it chase off opponents in 2014?
It's not going to hurt her in that regard. I think since she's a freshman this year, you know, the conventional wisdom is if you're going to challenge an incumbent, this is the time to do it. So she may end up having an opponent, but I think this is one of those things that's calculated and probably very effective in ensuring that any opponents who may want to come forward won't be able to get her on that issue.
But, you know, what's interesting about that is that people have legitimate questions about how this affects them. With all the disinformation the Republicans have put out there, they have questions they want to have answered. And it's interesting that there's an op-ed piece in the paper today from the governor of Kentucky talking about how they're implementing it and how much enthusiasm there is about it. And if you're down there in New Albany and around the border there and you're renting, you're thinking, why am I living in Indiana when I can move to Kentucky and get my health care covered?
Well, I do think it's true that in Susan Brooks' district and probably every other congressional district, frankly, in the state and maybe the country, if you did a statistically valid survey of what people do and know and don't know about the various aspects of this law and the nuances, I think
they would not know.
I think
they
the
would
scores
not know.
And,
scores
and they don't know that 80%.
And there's a lot of opposition, but one way to maintain opposition in that atmosphere is to keep them from knowing.
That's exactly what this is designed to do.
What's interesting about this is, you know, she's in her first term, and she's very popular. She's communicating to them about what is the most talked about issue of the day right now, and that's what she ought to be doing. But what's interesting about this whole education idea is that the Obama administration has done a terrible job of educating the public about what's going to happen and when, how this thing works. And the reason is they can't explain it. And that's the problem is.
And that's why
you got Democrats who are now calling for a delay of the implementation of this because they know it can't be explained. America doesn't understand it, and that's why it has a negative response.
It could be explained by Susan Brooks too, if she was interested in explaining it rather than protecting herself from a primary.
All right, still with this, as Congress struggles to find a compromise on the budget and Obamacare, both of Indiana's U.S. senators made floor speeches this week. Republican Dan Coats got noticed for this little piece of factual information.
The reality is that we will need 13 Democrats to override a presidential veto.
That was earlier this week. Today he went to the floor again and talked about how Democrats are in control of the Senate and the White House, and therefore they can't prevail in this argument. Mike McDaniel, is Dan Coats the anti-Ted Cruz?
Dan Coats, I don't know if you saw this speech this week, but Dan Coats gave a speech this week where he tried to explain the political realities of where we are at this moment regarding this.
He makes it clear he's an opponent of Obamacare.
He said six facts that he put out there that kind of laid out where everything is, including the fact that they're in a minority in the Senate and so forth and so on. And he was trying to make the point that, you know, we've got to get back to where a yes vote is really a yes vote and a no vote is really a no vote. Instead of all this procedural mumbo jumbo that there's no way the American public can understand, that there's no way that they can understand when somebody comes home from Congress and says, oh, yes, I voted for that, but really that meant, no, I wasn't for that. You know, all that gobbledygook, he was trying to sort that out. And I give him stopwatch for that. He voted for cloture this afternoon.
Right.
Which keeps the issue alive.
As did 78 other members
of the Senate. And antagonizes a lot of the very people on the far right of the party who didn't want him to do that. So he's been pretty thoughtful about this issue from day one.
Well, and in the speech that he just gave, he made it clear that he thought that the Ted Cruz strategy is misguided.
Oh, he was a laughingstock. I mean, he doesn't even understand what green eggs and ham is all about.
Who are you
shows
talking about now?
Ted Cruz,
okay,
I'm talking about.
Well,
the green eggs and ham should have given it away. But he doesn't even understand what the moral of that story is. And I was really confused by Dan Coats' first speech. They have 46 votes in the Senate, and he thinks they need 13 to override. Well, it takes a two-thirds vote.
Which we get means 67.
Means 67, not 59. Maybe Common Core has a real role in Indiana for the future generation.
Maybe he knows about
that's
some folks
math.
That are going to vote the other way.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, maybe you say just 13 more.
Maybe.
But he didn't say that. I'm interested in how much Dan Coats is speaking out here.
Yeah, I think it is interesting, and I do think that the far right is giving him grief and will continue to give him grief. But look, I think Mike is exactly on point here when it comes to the mumbo jumbo and the procedural messages and the inability of us in the United States to understand what's going on. Look, we can figure these things out if they are what they seem to be. And as Mike said, a yes vote should be a yes vote, a no vote should be a no vote. And so for 2 years plus now, this whole law, which was passed in 2010...
And upheld.
...has been, and upheld by the courts, has been in this state of limbo. And the reality is it's the law of the land. And unless something happens between now and October 1st, it becomes law. And we are sorely we don't have enough information about it because there hasn't been that effort made. And I agree, the president's failed miserably in informing the public, but so has members of Congress. We need this information because it's the law of the land. And I think Dan Coats is tapping into that.
And a message that this stuff needs to be understandable.
Right.
I agree. There should be simple up and down votes so that people can understand what they're represented. The representatives in Washington are where they come down on these issues. But we haven't seen, I don't think, just how confusing it's going to get in the next few days, because now that the continuing resolution is back in the House and you have I'm talking about funding, which
right.
of course is tied
the
now.
The Senate put funding back in
right.
for Obamacare and then voted for the continuing resolution which funds the government.
But now, of course, as you look at the negotiations and the talking points or the negotiating posture of Republican leadership, you're now seeing, well, we might be willing to vote for this if the Keystone Pipeline is back in and if there's changes in coal regulation. And all of a sudden, we started off with a discussion of health care. Then we became,
the
then it became a discussion, well, then, that's point two, a discussion of the budget and federal spending and the debt ceiling, and then you lump it with it. Now we're going to have a bunch of environmental issues. Another thing,
but that's part of the negotiation process, because what's going to happen at the end of this thing is all those other issues, Keystone Pipeline, other things you're talking about, will be jettisoned at the end of the day for what's really important in the negotiation process. And I'm going to predict right now, I think what's going to happen is they're going to delay implementation of the thing to keep the government alive, and we'll see what happens come Monday.
Now to Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly. He took to the Senate floor to deliver something of a lecture to his fellow senators.
All of the fighting here in Washington, back home in Indiana, everyone's on the same page. They want good, stable jobs so they can take care of their families, send their kids to college, and retire with dignity. That's what Hoosiers want. And most think Congress can do something to help in that regard. Even if that's something, is simply don't make things worse.
John Katzenberger, will that speech accomplish anything?
Aside from emptying the hall, apparently. it's an inoculation. I mean, this is a very sensible thing. This is the kind of thing that Joe Hoosier, Jane Hoosier, is going to look at and say, yeah, that's right, I agree with that. And it helps to inoculate him going forward in the same manner, only slightly less so than Susan Brooks.
Well, he wants to talk about something else. He's a supporter of Obamacare. He'd like to fix it in several ways, but he voted twice to fund it today and to move on without it being an issue. He wants to talk about something else.
And that's not a new thing, I think, for him. You look back at ever since the passage, actually, of the Affordable Care Act, and there were elements, sub-debates over sub-issues about that would affect medical implement manufacturers. Guess what? Some of his constituents in his district, now I'm talking about even, you know, pre-Senate days, happened to be medical device manufacturers, and so he found himself in a tug of war there. Then in the Senate, in his role, it's a tug of war. We've seen, you know, the chamber on one side pro-reform coalitions on the other side vying for his affection and his vote. This is nothing new for him.
Is it a good move?
Well, I think the core of the content of what he said was absolutely correct. I think that's exactly what Hoosiers want. I also agree with John that this was an inoculation speech, because he's not going to talk about Obamacare. He wants to talk about this. And this was all designed to say, look, I'm above all of that. You know, don't lump me in with all these other guys out here. I'm different than they are. And that's what this is. And if you're going to point at Susan Brooks for doing something that's completely legit, you know, this was a political speech in its true sense of the word, too.
Well, but this didn't cost the taxpayers any money like Susan Brooks did.
And that's all fine because that's what they're supposed to do, communicate with their voters.
They're not supposed to put their campaign message out to the voters on taxpayer expense.
But Joe Donnelly's going to have to defend his votes for Obamacare.
And you know what? By the time all is said and done with Obamacare, most people are going to be happy with it. Not everybody's going to be happy with it. And is it going to have to be tweaked a number of times like Medicare was and Medicaid was? Yes. And if the Republicans were actually interested in the good of the country, if they were, they would be working to make it better because it is the law of the land. But they're not. They want to see it fail. They want to see Obama fail. And that's their overarching message here.
Politics isn't anything new in Washington. Attorney General Greg Zeller says he was misunderstood. Zeller recently testified before state lawmakers regarding drug abuse in Indiana. This is a video of the hearing taken from the state website. His comments sparked a firestorm on the internet led by people who believe he made a call for mandatory drug testing of pregnant women. There's even a petition signed by people who believe he's seeking to violate constitutional rights. This is what Zeller said.
In Indiana, our obstetricians are not required to screen pregnant women for addiction or abuse of controlled substances.
A statement from Zeller's office says those words should not be interpreted to imply that he supports mandatory testing of any kind for pregnant women. He does not. John Schwantes. Was he misunderstood, or was he floating a trial balloon, or did he make a flip-flop?
Let me think. My three options again. Don't you hate it when you misquote yourself? I don't know if it was. There are a lot of ideologues in government in Indiana. Greg Zeller's not an ideologue. I think he's shown that on other issues that he is someone who has been willing at times to break with the most conservative elements of his own party. So I think he may get a mulligan on this one in a way that some others might not.
Well, I think that's true. I think that also, though, that this came to light, I've also been directed to a video interview that he did on the Palladium Item website out of Richmond, where he made it pretty clear that he was in favor of mandatory drug testing for women, and obviously now he's not, so something's changed.
Well, the lesson here is that everything you say is being stored somewhere, and somebody can have access to that, and so you better be consistent and expect it to come back to you at some point. I agree that unless something else pops up, it's a symptom of the times. If somebody vehemently disagrees with your position, they have the means now to make a big fuss. As we saw with that petition, you know, you put the petition up, you get the word out, and suddenly you have, a fair amount of opposition to it. So I agree. I don't think it's going to have any material effect on Attorney General Zeller, but I do think it's kind of a sign of the times.
He was testifying about the fact that children who are born to women who are using opiates cost $30 million a year in the state, and that something needs to be done.
Well, I mean, there's no question that there's a monetary cost, but the other cost is the moral cost to those children. I mean, they come into the world at a distinct disadvantage, addicted. But what do you do about it? I mean, that's where you bring in education, and that's where you bring in diversion programs and all. Mandatory drug testing is not the answer, and he's right to flip-flop because he was wrong on the issue to begin with.
Okay, so he heads up a commission that's going to make recommendations for the legislature to act upon in 2014. Those will come out near the end of the year. Will mandatory drug testing be in those recommendations?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't think so, but because he did not endorse that idea. Greg Zeller's no zealot. I mean, clearly he's proven that over and over again. He's a very thoughtful elected official. Look, he is concerned deeply about the fact that, dependency on prescription drugs in particular has taken a real toll on society, not just pregnant women, but all of society, and especially with pregnant women. But, that's something we need to be aware of. Now, there are states who are doing just that. Florida just did, I think, in the last week or last month where they made it mandatory. But this is an issue that we've got to address in Indiana because it's becoming more serious by the day.
Well, we'll see where the Florida statute holds up, too. Yeah.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should pregnant women be forced to take a drug test? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, why not test everybody? Last week's question was, should Greg Ballard pursue a third term in office? 43% said yes, 41% said no, 16% said who else is running? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. If a referendum on gay marriage, on a gay marriage ban was held in Indiana right now, it would be difficult to predict the outcome. That's one finding in a new poll from Freedom Indiana, the political action committee formed to fight the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. The poll conducted by Christine Matthews, the one-time pollster for Mitch Daniels, found 64% don't think an amendment is the right way to deal with gay marriage. The poll shows 46% oppose the amendment with 43% in support. That's within the margin of error. Megan Robertson of Freedom Indiana.
I think there's some education to do. We need to make sure everybody, voters, constituents, understand exactly what this amendment would do. But our campaign is going to do its job and make sure that that happens.
I haven't seen the poll results, but I would say that's different from all the people that I'm hearing from.
That's Eric Miller of Advance America, a leading opponent of gay marriage. Mike McDaniel, is the finding in that poll a revelation?
No, I don't think so. Christine Matthews is a credible pollster. I mean, I've always found her work to be very good. I've been privy to three surveys in the last about 60 to 90 days, and the range has gone from approval of those who are against same-sex marriage has gone from 57 at the high to what she had, I think what she had, 43 or something like that, or 46. And so it's been in that range, somewhere in there. So, you know, I think it's her work's pretty good. But what's interesting about this particular issue is that the response I'm getting when I talk to members who are going to have to deal with this next session, and I think it will be the overriding issue of the next session, some of them are telling me that they just think that people ought to decide, period. And we've talked about this enough. Let's let them decide,
right?
Because they're not voting for it, but they're saying let them decide whether they want it. And so their argument is, well, if people are scared of it, why are they, you know? Then others are absolutely saying, no, we can't allow that to happen. We need to be like 30 other states in this country that have this amendment on the books. So it's all over the lot. This will be the dominant issue in the next session. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I think one of the lessons here is that Freedom Indiana has been in place for a month. They've already raised enough money and conducted a first-class poll. They're a serious effort.
Well, it's going to be a serious effort on both sides, and it's going to be a very divisive issue, and it's going to highlight Indiana in a very negative way nationally. At the same time, our unemployment's above the national average, and we're trying to attract jobs. It's exactly the wrong message. It's not even – you can believe in only heterosexual marriage. It's already on the books. Do you put that in the Constitution along with that second line, which prohibits any recognition of any other kind of thing? It's a bad idea. It's been the bad idea from the inception, and it's been something that the right wing has pushed, and the Republicans have jumped on board.
Wait a minute. We've had 80 votes in the House and 40 in the Senate. You continue to say this is a Republican Democrat.
It is.
But if you talk, but if you
had Democrats
in our platform,
both houses,
not in our platform.
But if you talk to Republican legislators who voted for a marriage ban in the past, there are some positions that are shifting.
There are positions that are shifting, but as Mike has said before, I don't think it will stop the amendment from going forward so that there is ultimately a vote on this. I think it's highly likely now, though, that there will be an amendment proposed, and that may actually pass, which would reset the clock on this.
Right.
Because I think opponents are concerned about what might happen if the momentum continues to carry if the ban is voted down.
All right, if you're edgy, do you want to reset the clock, or would you like this to go away? Do you want to send it to a referendum, and if people are really against it, let them kill it?
Well, if you're against it, I suppose you'd want to burn some more clock because, and we've talked about this before, no issue that I've seen has gone from the point A to point B in Indiana and elsewhere so rapidly. If you'd had daily tracking polls, which I'm not suggesting anybody tracks this deal, it would be incredible. So I think right now
attitudes are shifting quicker in the public.
I think that's exactly right. And I think if this were to go to a referendum right now, I think there's a very good chance that it would lose in Indiana because you also have Eli Lilly and other major manufacturers that are giving political cover to those with business interests.
All right.
Absolutely.
Finally, Indiana Pacers star Paul George has signed a new long-term deal. The 23-year-old George will be paid between $80 and $90 million over 5 years. He says he plans to take on a bigger role in Indianapolis outside of basketball now that he has the new deal with the team.
I wanted to take that, you know, that role as, you know, being our guy and, you know, being the one that, you know, can open doors, you know, for, you know, to add to our fan base. So, you know, I'm happy with the role that I got.
Ann Delaney, is Paul George the next Reggie Miller?
Well, we could hope. That's a lot of money. And I'm glad he's going to add to the fan base, but I hope he uses some of that money for the better good in Indiana as well, because that's an awful lot of money for shooting baskets.
Maybe try to be the next Peyton Manning.
Maybe. Right? That would be a good thing.
Yeah. Try to help out the community. Or is he just going to try to sell basketball tickets?
No, I think he's a good citizen, and he's a great player, so hopefully he'll produce to that
both
amount
ways.
Of money.
Both yeah. ways.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.